WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are waiting on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then we're going to have a lot of waiting to do, sit around all day on Sunday watching regular football as we play sort of this fake football on Thursday night, get ready for the action. The Ravens take off next Sunday. Two false Sundays of sitting around with no football for the Ravens, but plenty of football everywhere else. Luke Jones joins us now in the aftermath of an escape victory over the Cleveland Browns. Of course, Luke is usually in Owings Mills all week, but they're not even practicing this week. You can find him out at Baltimore, Luke, and all of our work. On Friday, I'll be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour at Greenmount Station, which is about to become a sports wagering facility in addition to an OTB. Be good to be up there with Chris. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play, giving away some Ravens scratch-offs up in Hempstead on Friday. We'll be back in Dundalk at Drug City, my homeland, the fountain at Drug City, next Friday, November the 4th, in advance of the New Orleans game, where the Ravens will be taken on to the road. Let's see, Tampa, New Orleans, and Luke, special teams drawing the Ravens not just in but also out on the offensive line, and the phantom call and bringing in Gene Steratore and trying to figure out who jumped. But special teams were as big a story in Sunday's game, and they usually are when John Harbaugh's coaching.
Yeah, and usually it's Justin Tucker taking the lead, and certainly he makes the 55-yard field goal early in the fourth quarter to put them back up by 10 points. But for me, I look at this game, and that's why I wrote about this at BaltimorePositive.com. The offense did some good things at times. Other times, we saw the same red zone issues. We saw a passing game that wasn't really moving the ball the way that you'd like. Didn't really try to move the ball a whole lot in that way. And on the defense, they started poorly. Straighten themselves out, but then late in the game, shaky once again as the Browns ran right down the field on them on Cleveland's penultimate drive. Or I guess not counting the very last, the last 15 seconds or whatever it was. But for me, I look at the special teams with the way that the Ravens were playing in that first quarter. Defense couldn't get off the field. Offense moved the ball, but again, bogs down in the red zone. They go three and out. They're in a position where they're losing 10-3. Jordan Stout goes out there. Kevin Stefanski with a curious challenge on a spot of the ball, which we talk about this all the time. Unless it's so obvious on a spot, a situation where they thought clearly Lamar Jackson's forearm was down and it was only the wrist. And hearing Gene Steratore's explanation for that was pretty funny as well.
How is a wrist not a ball? How do you use your hand with the ball to brace the ground?
But you can if it's the hand. It just can't be the forearm. But apparently the wrist is considered part. It's silliness. Just hearing myself talk, I'm just laughing.
I'm just saying, but I don't know if you know this or not, but I spent the weekend in a casino. People gamble on this.
I know, right?
Really do. They gamble on this.
Lots of people do, too. It's pretty lucrative from what I hear, based on commercials I hear every 2 minutes. But I thought that challenge, which, keep in mind, Jordan Stout punted that ball, and it went a very ordinary 44 yards, something like that, but it was blown dead because the challenge flag was thrown right before the snap. He fires off a 69-yard punt after that. And for me, that kind of changed the game. It backed Cleveland up, a Ravens defense that, let's face it, was not playing with much confidence on those first two drives, started to get into attack mode. Patrick Queen, a couple tackles for a loss. Browns go three and out. And then Duvernay snaps off the long punt return. So as much as we focus on Malik Harrison's field goal block, and rightfully so, even though it was a 60-yard kick and not exactly a high percentage play after, as you mentioned, a phantom, curious, questionable, whatever you want to call it, a false start that I'm still not convinced was really a false start, or at least you typically don't see it called in that way. But again, the Ravens won't complain because other calls this year haven't gone their way. But you look at the special teams, and that's why I said, and I wrote it at BaltimorePositive.com, jump-started the Ravens early in that second quarter and really helped save the day in that fourth quarter when both the defense and the offense, for whatever reason, they can't get away from that late-game script that has really become maddening. It's still doing things at the late in games. And for me, that's what was disappointing about Sunday. They get the win. Again, a win is a win. Divisional opponent. Move on. You have a Thursday night game, but still seeing these mistakes late in games really concerns me because it's not winning football. And John Harbaugh would be the first to tell you that. So it worked out for them. They escaped this time around, as you mentioned, but they got to play better, cleaner football in the final 10 minutes or so. Because you look at the schedule and you see what the rest of the league looks like. And, you know, other than Buffalo and Kansas City, who else is better than the Ravens in the AFC right now? I'm not convinced. You know, Jets are a nice story. Are they better than the Ravens? I'm not buying that. Cincinnati is certainly coming on, but the Ravens already have a first game tiebreaker against them anyway. It's sitting right there for that, let's say, number three spot in the AFC right now to kind of grasp that ring. But the Ravens still need to play cleaner late in football games. So, you know, if they want to take advantage of this schedule that is going to be coming up, not once they get past these 2 weeks and they have the bye, second half of the season, it's not a bear like it was last year when we talked about that run they had last year of the division games and Green Bay and the Rams, and go down the list of the tough games they had in December into January. This is a much more reasonable schedule on paper. However, all those teams that we're talking about that the Ravens are going to be playing, they see a Ravens team that's 4-3 and keep squandering leads in the fourth quarter. So they've got to continue to grow, continue to improve. They have to play cleaner football in the fourth quarter. It was, as much as we spent some time talking about Lamar Jackson, it was good to see him be clean with the football at the very least. They, Justice Hill had the fumble, but Lamar didn't throw it to the other team, so that was good to see. But this is still very much a team that's a work in progress, which you can deal with that if you win, right? You can deal with Sunday's performance having some imperfections. What you don't like is having that same conversation, but you lose. And again, that's where you go back to the special teams coming up very big for this football team early in that second quarter and then again in the fourth quarter.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him all week, or at least half the week, and then an extended week. He'll be busy watching the Phillies with his brother-in-law and the World Series and Trey Mancini and all that stuff's going on. But I want to stay on football. We have plenty of time to talk baseball. Plenty of time to talk baseball. There'll be a lot more baseball being played than football over the next week and a half. I would just say for what happened on Sunday in regard to Ronnie Stanley playing a full game, JPP being involved in the game, the Malik Harrisons and the Patrick Queens not being absentee, Gus Edwards back running the football, McCary playing left and right tackle in some sort of a swing way that could give veteran Morgan Moses a little time off, that could let Ronnie Stanley adjust a little bit. The fact that John was talking to you on Friday about load management and workload, and we're looking forward to and then Ojabo, and then Bowser, and then maybe DeSean Jackson, if you believe in 35-year-old wide receivers. And I know you're a little dubious on that, as we all have been since, I don't know, Mike Wallace, Jeremy Maclin, just Dez Bryant. We can go through with names of all these, the trash heap, the dumpster dive that Eric DaCosta is doing. But there is a part of this that if you're Sugar Plum Fairying this out, I saw Mike Preston wrote about how bad the schedule is the next 6 weeks. So we're just going to win games because of that. But whatever the hope is Lamar's healthy. The offensive line's getting healthier. The running game, Dobbins aside, getting healthier. Mark Andrews, got to get him healthy. Rashad Bateman got it on the field. I think the second story of all of this, if they can somehow survive Thursday night and go down to Tampa and win a game that when it came on the schedule looked like they couldn't be favored. They couldn't win. It's Tom Brady. They're a better team. It's on the road. It's 4 days rest. All that's still true to some degree. But if they can survive Thursday, New Orleans, extra rest, bye coming around the corner, getting guys healthier, crappy schedule, Steelers stink. They're not coming. So there's all of that that looks at this and says, you better clear your calendar in early January. I mean, I think they're going to make the playoffs unless things really go asunder. And I would have said that if they lost to the Browns the other day, there's finding some blue sky. Now, all that goes away. You get out of Tampa and you lose 21-13 and you stink because you're playing on 4 days rest. And That would be I don't expect them to win Thursdays with all the – as bad as Tampa looked on Sunday and they're getting it together, this is the hardest thing in the world to do, to go on 4 days rest on the road and go try to beat the greatest quarterback that ever lived, who gets out of bed at least knowing what he's doing, now whether his teammates do or not. But I am worried about the game. But big picture, global thinking, yeah, they're in better shape than they've been, quite frankly, and as good a shape as you can be at 4-3, having blown double-digit leads in the three losses.
Well, and it still comes back to, I mean, it's a tired talking point at this point after last year, but it comes down to how healthy you are and where this team is right now. And look, you could go down to Tampa Thursday night and you lose two guys for the season. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. I mean, I just mentioned the Jets a few moments ago. Breece Hall, they're stud rookie running back, serious knee injury, it looks like. And how does that change their complexion? You know that you're one or two injuries away at the wrong position. Quarterback being the understood one for anybody, right? Any team that has a quarterback. But you know that is of the utmost importance. And we know the Ravens learned that all too well last year, especially. So, you know, from that standpoint, they have guys that are coming back. You have a little better depth at certain positions. The Dobbins surgery is certainly disappointing, because I still say that a healthy J.K. Dobbins, which, again, who knows if we're going to see that, that might be something that we're talking about next year as the most realistic outcome for him as far as being truly the guy that can be that difference maker. But that aside, you know, as you mentioned, getting Gus Edwards back certainly helps. You know, Bateman was back on the field. Justin Houston, who I mentioned a little bit in our previous conversation, but he was big for them. He's played well. He was playing really well before he hurt his groin in New England. You know, those first couple weeks, he kind of had been their entire pass rush early on as far as really being able to pressure from the edge. So, you know, you're in a position where you have a little bit better depth. You have some guys coming back. I mean, even Marcus Williams, who is on IR, will be back. It's not a season-ending wrist injury. So you're really in a position where, can you stay healthy? You know, you're getting healthier, but can you stay that way? And that's going to be the big question. They'll have some injuries. I mean, no one's going to go through an entire second half of the season and not lose at least a guy, you know, a couple guys, depth guy here or there, something along those lines. But you do look at everything on paper. And again, I stress on paper, because on paper, there are lots to say about this football team that could be 7-0, but I'm tired of, you know, I'm tired of the woulda, coulda, shoulda. You know, that's loser talk at the end of the day. It really is. And I think the Ravens would even tell you that. They've got to get the job done late in games. And that's why it was a little frustrating to see some of those things continue to pop up, even in victory on Sunday afternoon. But if you can navigate the next two, and let's just say, let's be realistic about this. At least win one of the next two, right? Which, you know, back-to-back road games, you know, two primetime games, still Tom Brady. You know, the Saints, believe me, I know it's a long way from the days of Drew Brees and Sean Payton, but still have some talented football players. I don't think that's a layup. You know, this team shouldn't be talking about any game being a layup at this point. They're 4-3. They're not 7-0, as I mentioned. So, but if you can navigate that, you get the bye week. Bowser's back by that point. Ajabo's back by that point. DeSean Jackson, I'm sure, is at least in the mix at that point. We'll see what that looks like. But, you know, Bateman's, you know, back on the field. I'll go down the list of all those different guys. You do look at the second half of the schedule. Carolina, which, give them a pat on the back for Sunday with the way they played, having traded Christian McCaffrey. But the Panthers have been a disaster this year. It's why Matt Rule's no longer there. At Jacksonville. The Jaguars, at times they look really good, other times not so good. And you know, they're a young team. So Denver, we know what kind of mess the Broncos have been, and who knows what's going on with Russell Wilson's health. At Pittsburgh, at Cleveland, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, and then at Cincinnati, week 18. I mean, you look at that run of games, there should be quite a few wins in there if you're playing at least solid to good football and you're staying relatively healthy. So I'm with you. I fully expect this team to make the playoffs. I thought that even a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the meltdown against Miami or against Buffalo, or certainly even against the Giants last week. But there's a difference between just making the playoffs and putting yourself in a position, not just record-wise, but playing the kind of football that you feel like you can make some noise and make a run in January. And that's where I go back to. This passing game needs to get better. They have to get better in the red zone. You kind of look at where they've been. You know, they started out weeks 1 through 3, 8 of 10 scoring touchdowns inside the red zone. Since then, 6 of 14. That's not good enough. I mean, 6 of 14 is bad for red zone efficiency or lack thereof. So they've got to clean that up. You know, defense, it's looking better for stretches, but what the heck was that at the start of the game on Sunday? That was frustrating. I mean, you've got the Super Bowl 47 team out there. Ray Lewis coming out doing the squirrel, and Ed Reed's carrying the Vince Lombardi trophy. Terrell Suggs does his thing. And you let the Browns move right down the field on you the first couple drives. So, you know, they straightened up after that until late in the game. But it's a very simple concept for this football team right now. As much as they can look good at times, that's most teams in the NFL. Ultimately, the key to being one of those top-tier teams is, can you put together a full 60 minutes? And the Ravens are still chasing that. And they might be chasing that for a while still, as we mentioned, with some of their challenges and guys coming back from injury and whatnot. But that said, this is a schedule on paper that should afford them the opportunity to get right and stack wins and be in a position where they're right there with Cincinnati, who, by the way, the Bengals – looking, that offense is looking much, much, much better. So,
by the way, Jamar Chase came up gimpy a little bit, you know, at one point on Sunday. And I'm thinking that would slow them down. You know, sure. What I mean? It only takes one thing to slow. It wouldn't have to be Burrow. That happened a couple years ago. But Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. You can, of course, follow him at Baltimore Luke and anywhere at Baltimore Positive as we get ready for the week. I'll be doing the Crab Cake Tour in the aftermath of the game on Thursday. I just want to say this, and I know it's not your jam, and you don't like talking about the fans and Chad Steele and empty seats and like all of that stuff, but I watched this from afar. And I watched it on live feeds at 12:30 on people's Facebook lives and whatever. It really is. And this isn't a Raven thing, and it's not a Baltimore thing. I think it's a sports thing. When the guys from 20 years ago come back, and I had reached Brandon Stokely 2 weeks ago when we beat the Giants or whatever, and I, you know, I can't reach the goose anymore, right? And that team, the second Super Bowl, the 47 team, is still fresh to everybody, right? There were hundreds of thousands of people downtown. We couldn't get in, like all that. It's fascinating that when they go back to honor these teams that nobody gives a rat's ass and nobody shows up in their seats at 12:30 and nobody even showed up at 1:30 or 2:30 in a lot of the seats, that the stadium was a little somnambulant. That's a little 3-3. But the fact that like those guys come out, Suggs comes out of the tunnel, it looks like there's 12,000 people in the stadium when they're doing it. I don't know how soon we forget. And I've written books that, you know, about these championships and whatever, but it feels like 10 years, a long time. I just thought there would be more love for that and them to get people there, that it was such a sensation for the city. Sometimes these reunion things leave me a little, they're a big deal to me, maybe because I know some of the players and it's good to see people come back or whatnot, but the fans don't take the reunions as seriously as maybe you think they're going to when you're in the parade and Mike Flynn's got tears in his eyes and says, they're never going to forget us. Well, they'll forget, or at least they won't remember, or they won't get out of bed to come and see you. I was a little underwhelmed by that. I thought that was a big championship. It was a big deal. Just like the first one was a big deal. The fan base is still the fan base. Yeah. I thought like it could have been Ray Danson and stuff. I remember when the stadium was electric for that stuff and the people in it were electric. I think those people by and large, like myself, are gone now. A lot of those people that sat in the seats 10 years ago, it's certainly turned over 20 years. I can promise you that in 5:13. But the people that had the mojo to come out and get a roar going for the old guys, even at halftime, people go to the bathroom, they don't come back to their seats. Like, you know, it kind of bums me out a little bit as a guy that's written books on these things.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I can't say that I disagree with you on that. I was a little surprised to see the number of empty seats, but you know, I go back to some of
the, if you're honoring the 66 Orioles, it's been 50 years, right? Like I get that, but I thought this would be just more gusto. They promoted the hell out of it. It was all over my face. Like just all the things going into it. I felt like I missed something not being there, but I feel like I missed nothing in retrospect now.
Yeah. I mean, although I would say now they promoted it, but they didn't make any players available to the local media out in Owings Mills over the course of the week. But I digress on that.
But they don't know what they're doing. I'm glad to say that when you're on the air or off the air, Chad Steele doesn't know his ass from his elbow. And the Sashi, where's Sashi Brown? I thought he's running the place. Dick Cass would have been in the soup in the middle of all of this. I don't like the way it smells that there are empty seats and they don't care, and that they just don't care. And there were a lot of empty seats for the middle of a season. I mean, Lamar's supposed to be a sensation, right? Lamar's supposed to be the Beatles. Lamar's supposed to be a reason to – tickets were $20 on Sunday, dude. Yeah. Tickets on the online all morning long on Sunday. You can go to the game for $20 or $30. So I don't know. People don't want to go. And I don't know why that is. I still want to go. I feel dirty not being there. Like, it's what I do. And I'm not there, but eh, no one else seems to care much. And games on TV, and I get to use the bathroom, and the beer's cheaper. And I had leftovers from Gunpowder Lodge. Thank you, JR and Danny, for making me a crab cake. But I just smell like something's really amiss for the franchise locally in a connection way. And here's why I'll tell you this, Luke, because you're in the middle of it. And it's just me bitching about Chad Steele and like whatever. Fine. I spent the weekend out. I was at Gunpowder Lodge Friday. Friday night, I went to Hollywood Casino at the Barstool. I was with Dwayne Starks. There were Phillies fans in there. So I was out all day Friday, all night Friday, came in two different places. I came back home. Saturday, I spent Saturday at the Pitby Festival. Pitby Festival's a mile from the stadium downtown. The last time I was down there, the Ravens threw a draft party down there several years ago, down at City Garage in Port Covington. And I don't see people wearing Ravens hats on Friday. I don't see them wearing Ravens jackets on Saturday. I don't see Purple Friday being a thing anymore. I drove through Federal Hill on Saturday in the middle of the day, got out of my car. I just don't see the mojo for the team the way we had Purple Flamingos on the lawn. And that 26, 27 years into this, the fact that it's not a religion anymore, shame on them, but it's a bummer. It's a bummer. And I think the Orioles can learn from this to some degree if they get new owners and new people to sort of rev the engine up again, because the Orioles have an opportunity here. I'm just saying the Orioles have an opportunity to bring people back. The Ravens are still are trying to keep people in. The Ravens have never not been relevant, right? The Wembley knee aside, and I mean, how they treated me, I'm two seats. I just feel like they really need to do some more things here locally to stimulate passion, not ticket sales, not do I have purple in my closet, like passion, you know, hurting when they lose, wanting to be there when they win, needing to be there to honor players and all of that. And Lamar stands in the middle as Elvis in all of this. There shouldn't be empty seats at $20 a throw. I mean, there just shouldn't be. And yeah, I'll say that. And you sit in the stadium now. You're a little bit, you're behind the glass. It's a little bit more quiet. But I've been seeing this for a number of years. And now that I'm outside of it, I'm watching it because I'm not going back. I'm not going back until I'm apologized to and get my press pass. I'm not giving them money. I don't say it a lot, but I'm not giving them money for what they did to me personally. But that has nothing to do with 15,000 people not wanting to go to the game on Sunday. That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. And full disclosure, and I always say this, and this is why I tread carefully talking about attendance, talking about tickets. I don't pay to sit in the press box. You know, I am there I do not pay for season tickets to be there. So I want to be very clear about that. However, as an observation, and this really lends itself to what you were just saying, I do think there's something to the idea of probably both parties, the Ravens and the fan base, maybe taking the other for granted a little bit too much, or maybe there's been a little bit too much of that. Dare I say, maybe some complacency over, I don't know, when it started, what was it, when they left Westminster for training camp?
I would call it arrogance. And well, you spend time with Chad Steele, and you spend time in that building, and you spend time around people out there. There's nobody that wakes up there on Monday morning pissed off that people didn't come to the game Sunday. There's nobody in charge of that, of why are our tickets not selling on the secondary market? Why don't people want to come down? Why aren't people here at 9 o'clock in the morning making, you know, roast beast out in the parking lot with like all of that magic that I lived through. And I, you know, I've seen Todd Heap and I've seen Dwayne Starks out the last week and a half, being in front of them in their era of player, and knowing what those Sunday mornings felt like, smelled like, what the traffic looked like, what the sound sounded like in the stadium. And it doesn't sound the same on third down. It just doesn't.
Yeah. And I would venture to guess, Nestor, even in some of the, and this is still a very healthy NFL market relative to other places. Let's be completely fair about that.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. I think some of this is inevitable just in this day and age, fantasy football, social media, secondary ticket markets that make it very easy to move and buy tickets, you know, compared to back in the day where, you know, you're dealing with brokers or you got to have a friend of a friend, whatever. Just all of that. I think there is a sense of taking it for granted a little bit more that was not the case for even someone like me. I'll be 40 next year, but I can vividly remember a childhood without having a team here in Baltimore. Someone who's 25, they know their old man talked about it or their grandparents talked about it, but they didn't live that. So is there a little bit of a sense of taking it for granted? And I would also say, this is where the Ravens are probably a little bit of a victim of their own success in the way that over the last two decades, I get it. They haven't been the Patriots. No one else has been either. They've been very successful for the better part of two decades now. That's indisputable. And we can talk about what's happened post Super Bowl 47. And I get it. People say they've only had two playoff wins over the last 9 years. And that's fair. And I'll hear that to a point. However, we're not talking about a team that is going 3-13, 3-14 every year. So I do think it goes both ways a little bit in terms of taking it for granted. Maybe taking the experience for granted, as I've seen lots of people come in from other markets visiting media say that the fan experience in terms of the light show for primetime games and the presentation, all of that, it's still regarded very highly compared to lots of places around the league. I don't think the fan experience in Baltimore is by any means bad compared to what you see elsewhere. And I've been to plenty of other stadiums, not as many as you, but it's a fun experience. Is it what it was 20 years ago? Well, a lot of that probably has to do with you don't have Ray Lewis coming out of the tunnel, whereas when the Ravens do pregame introductions now, you know, full disclosure, I never missed it when Ray danced. I used the restroom on Sunday, you know, during introductions, because there's nothing to see. It's nothing that's really making the hair on the back of your neck stand up. And look, that's not to say Lamar Jackson should start doing the squirrel. Let's be very clear about that. Nothing is going to replace Ray Lewis doing that. So I think it's a lot of those things. And I do think, going back to Westminster or maybe some other examples of some things over the years, is there the same kind of intimate relationship that it felt like the Ravens had for years with the fan base that, you know, wasn't the same as the Colts back in the 60s either. Let's be clear about that. This is just the natural progression of what we've seen with professional
sports.
Yeah,
man, sports. I've sat out at the barn with real people for years and sat out and been a part of it, and even seeing the way people reacted to Todd Heap and Dwayne Starks.
Sure.
And, like, it's different when the backup tight end is charging $49 for an autograph at an autograph show.
Sure.
Like, that is just not...
But I agree with you. I don't disagree. But at the same time, what you're describing in the 90s and the 2000s was not the same as breaking bread and having dinner with Johnny Unitas back in 1962 either. It's changed. It's a different pay scale. They're in a different tax bracket. All of those things. So
Marlon Humphrey's on a different planet.
Well,
you know, like literally, like some of these guys bring an arrogance with them that is just unrecognizable to me if you're trying to sell a brand, if you're trying to put your brand out in front, and somebody's in charge of such things here. I don't know who that is, Brad Downs. I don't know who's in charge of it, but I do know running out to an orchestrated football game where they all disappear at halftime and shoot a little video. I caught up with Brent Harris over the weekend about Marlon Humphrey running out at halftime when he's supposed to be the halftime game. Like they're, what the speaking terms are and what the reality happens on Sunday when they play football games in front of empty seats, when they bring back their champions. That's the reality. That's where it is. That's not just me being mean because they screwed me over, which they did, but I'm not in my seats. But being in my seats the last 5 years, I have looked around and said, this isn't as much fun as it used to be. This isn't worth as much as it used to be? And I'm still here, but where's everybody I used to high five in the old days? They're gone. I'm not coming back. So I don't know who's going to be in that seat that's going to bring that passion that I brought for 24 years and where the next round of that is. Because it does feel like the kids want to stay home and gamble and play on the video game. And like, they're not replacing, my kid didn't replace me. And I've made that clear. And every time I brought that up with Kevin Byrne or Dick Cass, and Lord knows I don't have conversations with Chad Steele, and he doesn't care anyway, which is part of the problem. When I would bring those things up to Eric DaCosta, he would say, we're making more money than we've ever made. Okay. They're making more money. So at the end of the day, they made more money yesterday than they made when Ray Lewis was dancing. So they don't really care.
Yeah. Well, and it goes back to what Mark Cuban said famously of about a decade ago at this point. You know, not to say that, you know, he said pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. I don't think we're anywhere close to that, but I do think the NFL and individually in these markets, save for a few, as you mentioned, Jacksonville being one of those examples, it's too big to fail. I mean, that's really, you know, as you mentioned, yeah, they want a full stadium, but do they want to do everything that it takes to make that happen? I don't know. It depends.
Too big to fail. They're all making money no matter what they do.
Right. I mean, that's the big thing. You can probably, you could lower ticket prices if you wanted, but that's going to lower the bottom line.
The market already lowered the ticket prices.
Sure,
the people that paid $200 were trying to get $54 and couldn't get it.
No,
right?
I got
it.
But I mean that they could lower those to begin with, right? If they were cheaper to begin with, yeah, you probably, you'd get more people. Now, I want to be clear and let's be fair about this. It's not as though they had a bunch of empty seats for Cincinnati a couple weeks back. Buffalo, for it being a pretty lousy day weather-wise, was a premium opponent.
Buffalo brought 15,000 people with them.
But my point is we're not talking about an empty stadium every single week. But I was to agree with you. I was a little surprised, and I think it hurt from the standpoint of right off the bat you didn't have the Super Bowl MVP there, and there was no way to work around that. The Jets have the same bye week as the Ravens. So short of Joe Flacco being released or retiring or getting hurt, there was no way to have him there. So
I don't think Joe Flacco would have gotten anybody else there.
Oh, early. No. But if you want to, I'm speaking as Luke Jones when he was the 20-year-old fan, that's something that, that's a bummer, that he wasn't there in the same way that if you had an anniversary, the next anniversary for the Super Bowl 35 team. And if Ray Lewis isn't there, well, that's going to leave it lacking. Right. So
I just felt bad that Bernard Pollard wasn't there to shake John Harbaugh's hand.
Right. Exactly. Or to meet Lamar Jackson. Right. After their Twitter spat over the summer. But no, I think those types of things, and again, I'm not disagreeing with your general sentiments that you just expressed. And I think some of that is just, I think it's just reality of as time goes on. I think it's less, there's a detachment that feels like it's just growing wider and wider between.
Well, they don't play a home game for a month now, right? They don't play at home until November 20th.
Yeah. So maybe that will, who knows if that impacts things. What it had been 3 home games in the last 4 weeks, and I think a lot of people, I know a few people who went to the game on Sunday, and they're not season ticket holders anymore, but they're the types that say, hey, I'll go to 2 or 3 games, or I might go to 4 games. I'm going to go to the postseason if they're playing home playoff games, but yeah, I think you find more and more people as time goes on to have that commitment. Now, it's not only 2 preseason games and 8 regular season games, and you just dump off the 2 preseason games. Now, sometimes you have 9 home games. It's a lot of Sundays to commit to in terms of knowing that it's an all-day thing to go to a football game. That, I think, in this day and age, for whatever reason, and we can talk about all types of different things that people can do on any given Sunday, but it does feel that, there isn't maybe the same maniacal obsession, a religious experience almost, as you called it, that, not the same maybe as it had been. But at the same time, this is still a team that is a market that's still very healthy overall as it relates there. It's not as though we're seeing that on a weekly basis. And, I think part of this is also, and this is where I get into, maybe they're being a little bit of taking it for granted, but I think people are waiting to and ready to see this team take the next step, in the Lamar Jackson era. I think there's a sense of, you know, perhaps you become a little more like the Atlanta Braves fan base for years, where we can remember them saying that they couldn't sell out divisional series games and they couldn't sell out NLCS because they were waiting for the Braves to finally win the World Series, right? So, you know, I think there is probably a little bit of that going on. But again, I think most of the issues that you laid out are you can apply to most markets around the NFL. I think it's something that teams are trying to figure out, or maybe not as much as they should be, but are at least pondering. And you mentioned the gambling thing. It's why you know, you're going to see sports books in all these stadiums, and you're going to see that, you know, which, you know, you've seen that in Europe at soccer stadiums for years. You're going to see that. And is that going to pack the place? Well, remains to be seen, but certainly teams are trying to figure out new ways to attract fans to change that fan experience.
I'm going to show this picture because it's the worst picture I ever took in the seats. This was the night that Flacco got hammered by Kiko Alonso. So this is right after Wembley. About a month after Wembley, they played. Was it a Thursday or Monday night? It was a Monday night game.
I think it was a Thursday night.
It was a Thursday game, I believe. Yeah. Either way, these are my seats taken over. And all these guys weren't even from Miami. They were New Jersey cops who liked the Miami Dolphins. They were hammered too. But you can see how many empty seats there were. And we're going back 5 years ago, right? Yeah. So when I think, look at my wife's hair. Look at my hair. I would just say over the last 5 years, that night was a telling night for me because it's the first time I ever sat there and had empty seats everywhere, visiting fans to my right, behind me, to the left. I'd never seen anything like it. And 5 years later, I've now been thrown out by their management and by their ownership, and there's nobody coming. You know, I mean, there used to be a time in that era that if I wasn't in the seat, there are 100 people that wanted to be in the seat. That's not really where it is anymore. And I think it's important that we discuss that in the same way that I think it's going to be important discussing how much money they're going to be getting from the state, what Wes Moore is going to have to give them to keep both of these franchises, who's going to own the Orioles long term, and really who's going to own the Ravens long term when Bisciotti decides that he's not the guy anymore. And there's only 5 years left in the Ravens lease in the stadium. And the Ravens put a lot of money into the stadium, much different than where the Orioles were prior to the left field wall and the Maryland Stadium Authority. This is going to get sticky. This is going to be an interesting thing. As we worked hard to keep the Orioles and build a stadium, we worked hard to attract the Ravens and steal a football team, steal the Cleveland Browns. But that was 30 years ago. How hard are we going to work now to continue to have vibrant, relevant, full downtown business, industry, taxes, commerce, all of that around these franchises? I'll be writing more about that. You got anything else you want to say on football or baseball? Are you going to do a little baseball World Series thing here real quick?
Looking forward to the World Series. And, you know, I want to give a shout out to my brother-in-law who's, you know, going, having surgery this week. As you know, he's had some things that have happened with him the last 6 months. He's doing well, but
the Phillies are going to heal him. I have,
and that's what's, you know, full disclosure, as you know, he had an accident back in May. You know, it was very serious at the time, and the one thing that he was kind of restricted to that he could do, you know, when you're healing up and recovering and at home and you can't do a whole lot, is watch baseball. You know, he would be the first to tell you he's more of a Sixers fan, he's more of an Eagles fan. You know, if he's being honest, most like, you know, I think he'd say that, you know, he's a big basketball fan, but he was watching the Phillies, and the Phillies had a very similar start to the Orioles this year. I mean, May, they were still not very good. I mean, they fired Joe Girardi at the beginning of June, and they're eight games under 500. And they just went nuts. From that point, it was like a light switch. And he watched him on a nightly basis. So it's been
firing kind of cool. A guy who thinks he's a Hall of Fame manager. It's crazy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And his lieutenant, Rob Thompson, he was a Girardi guy and they love him. So it's kind of crazy to kind of think how much they love him and how much they clearly didn't like Joe Girardi.
But I had to Google him for a minute because I knew he wasn't Robbie Thompson.
No, it was funny. I asked my brother-in-law the same at the time that they made the managerial change, and he actually didn't know who Robbie Thompson was.
Yeah, well, I watched baseball all my life, so I'm, you know.
cool run. I mean, the Bryce Harper home run on Sunday. I mean, bottom of the eighth. After he spit on the pitch before, you know, it was a great pitch that he laid off and, you know, it just clubs it out the left field. I mean,
it was a moment.
You know, that's a moment. You watch something like that and you consider, hey, the Phillies were the sixth seed. They were the third wild card. That is not something that's impossible to think about as an Orioles fan. at this point. Now, they've got work to do, and you never know what's going to happen, and they got to spend money and augment the roster, and Elias has to make the right moves, but they're not a team that won 110 games. The team that did, the Dodgers, are sitting at home right now. So to see that moment, to see that crowd and hear that crowd in that moment, boy, it just gives you goosebumps thinking about the possibility of that happening at Camden Yards next year or the year after that or the year after that. Hopefully a couple times over the next several years. But what a moment. Heck of a run for that team. You know, you consider how many different things they went through, and Harper breaks his thumb early in the summer. And I mean, lots of things that did not go Philadelphia's.
There wasn't a Phillies fan in the world that thought they were going to the World Series on the 1st of July.
How about the
2 weeks ago?
I was going to say the final week of September when they were kind of choking away the last wild card and looked like Milwaukee was going to overtake them. So,
and the Padres had their problems too back in September.
Well, the Padres couldn't beat the Dodgers all year until October. I mean, they got their butts whooped by them in the regular season. So, you know, heck of a run for Philly. On the Houston side, I do feel really good for Trey Mancini. I do feel really good for Dusty Baker, who's one of the best men in baseball. I mean, you don't want the Astros to win, but if they do, Dusty wins. So it's kind of one of those deals where I think a lot of people are kind of conflicted in the sense of local fans are rooting for Trey Mancini, who, by the way, has had a really rough postseason. You know, still looking for his first October hit, which not great. He did have an RBI earlier in that series, but it's definitely unexpected. I mean, Houston being there, no surprise, right? I mean, it was at the consolation is that they disposed of the Yankees, which no one wants to see in the World Series. And they're not there, once again, as they continue their long drought in that regard for their standards. But the Philadelphia thing, you know, the Phillies, heck of a story. It really is, because, again, that is a team that back in May and June, it's kind of on very similar footing as the Orioles. Now, they were underperforming based on looking at their roster and what the expectations were and certainly what the payroll was. But you look at what the Phillies have been able to do in this postseason. And again, if you're an Orioles fan watching that, shouldn't be all that impossible to imagine that happening, because hey, they're the number six seed in the NL, which I know ruffles the feathers of a lot of baseball fans. And I get it. I'm conflicted with expanded postseason. And, you know, the more and more teams you put in, the lesser the chance of the best team winning. That's just the reality of it. But it's been a heck of a run. And I have to share this, and you'll appreciate this. The best thing I saw in regards to this Houston-Philadelphia World Series that's going to start later this week, someone called it the Dickie-thon series.
I like that. That's good. I'll go with that.
I mean, just, you know, just a name that only a true baseball fan is going to remember. I mean, a pretty nondescript player, for being honest, but I thought that was a pretty good one, and very much looking forward to this series. And again, on a personal level, looking forward to my brother-in-law getting home and watching some World Series Phillies baseball with him.
You get some time off too after Thursday night. You know, Dusty Baker was one of the finalists for the Phillies job back in 2020 as well. So I just did a look, and it's really weird that he didn't win with the Nationals, because I associate him, right? That they poop canned him after that awful loss in 17, and then they go and win. So kind of what the Earl Weaver went through with Joe Altobelli. He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. He'll be watching baseball and football on short rest as the Ravens get ready on Thursday night to take on the Tampa Bay Bucks, the GOAT, as they say, down to Tampa. We'll be following and monitoring all of it at WNST. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.